We have all had the experience of anticipating something that we thought would be very helpful and enjoyable in our lives, only to be disappointed right at the culminating moment. Hopefully that did not take place during any of your Christmas gatherings this past season. Some of you have, I believe, taken the view that the best surprise is no surprise, and have actually started buying what you want ahead of time and handing it over to family members to be wrapped. That does prevent a letdown, doesn't it? There's something that really seems to work there. I have told you of a time when we were out in California and Allison and I went on a trip up to Big Bear Lake in the mountains. We had found an amazing pastry place there on a previous visit. Pastry's very near and dear to my heart, and we were eager to return to this place. And you've probably had that before, you know, that place you loved. You had a great meal, and you're, you know, if you ever have the opportunity, you're going to go back. So you make the plans, and with our mouths salivating for cinnamon crisps and chocolate eclairs and the like, we pulled into the parking lot only to find that the place was closed that day. You probably, don't you just hate that? It's closed. It was like the iconic arrival of the Griswolds at Wally World in the film Family Vacation. After all the effort to get there, the craving would not be fulfilled in our case. Well, Job had been in a state of expectation since his friends arrived, and he was a long way from the trivial desires in which we usually indulge. He was craving more basic things, such as sympathy, encouragement, words of hope. And what better source could he have asked for than these friends, prominent men of intelligence and wisdom? As Eliphaz opened his mouth to share, what these men had decided that Job needed to hear, I'm sure that Job was thinking, ah, yes, you know, here comes what I need. This is the counsel that is going to lift me up from the ash heap. I'm starving, you know, for something that really feeds my soul. He was all ears, ready to receive the comfort of these fellow believers. What a shock to have to listen instead to an extended accusation of his own unrighteousness. To be told he really was at fault for everything that had happened, even to his family. Job has spoken in this chapter 6 of how little pleasure this life now held for him. He was coming face to face with the truth that his personal resources were not enough to lift him above the tragedies he was enduring. He was barely hanging on. He was clinging, yes, to God's word, but struggling. And now he is going to let his friends know what the effect of their counsel was on him. And his words are not flattering to them, nor should they be. They had come to a despairing man and had only driven him deeper into anguish and confusion. Job tells them that in regard to what he most needed, what he was expecting, anticipating, they were woefully deficient. And in the matters that were not helpful, Eliphaz had run his mouth to great excess. Hopefully by giving our attention to this passage, we will learn what helps a despairing soul and what does not. We begin with Job's declaration of the deficiency of the counsel in verses 14 through 23. So let's read those verses. For the despairing man, there should be kindness from his friend, so that he does not forsake the fear of the Almighty. My brothers have acted deceitfully, like a wadi, like the torrents of wadis which vanish, which are turbid because of ice and into which the snow melts. When they become waterless, they are silent. When it is hot, they vanish from their place. The paths of their course wind along. They go up into nothing and perish. The caravans of Tema looked. The travelers of Sheba hoped for them. They were disappointed, for they had trusted. They came there and were confounded. Indeed, you have now become such. You see a terror and are afraid. Have I said, give me something? Or offer a bribe for me from your wealth? Or deliver me from the hand of the adversary? Or redeem me from the hand of the tyrants? The Hebrew of verse 14 has led to different translations that definitely take the meaning in different directions. Here in the New American Standard, the idea is that kind words can keep someone on the right track spiritually. You can help another person's spiritual walk with the Lord by the quality of the words that you bring to them. That would be the meaning here. The ESV has the friends of Job as the ones who are forsaking reverence to God with their words. Okay? You're forsaking your reverence to God by this terrible counsel that you've given me. Then the King James and the NIV both go in even a third direction, with the idea being that we should be kind to a friend even if he is already forsaking the rightful worship of God. Okay? So really interesting how different, you know, those are and where they would lead you depending on which one you accepted. I do not presume to know Hebrew well enough to make a choice between these renderings on purely linguistic grounds. I question the third one quite a bit, because I don't see Job protesting that someone who has departed from the fear of God should be coddled. You know, he hadn't departed from the fear of God, and you know, was not expecting that. I just don't really understand why he would be saying that in this situation. I also wonder about the ESV translation. The words of Eliphaz certainly betrayed various problems, but I'm not sure that irreverence was one of them. Perhaps, I guess you could say that the lack of kindness alone displayed a lack of a proper fear of God or something along those lines. But with a nod to those two other possibilities that you might have in your versions, I am going to stick with the words of the New American Standard and what they communicate. I think that, to me, that is likely the meaning that was intended here. What all the translations agree on is that Job had a right to expect kindness from his friends. I mean, if you don't get it from your friends, you know, it's not coming, most likely. So he had a right to expect kindness from his friends, and he did not receive it. Kindness wasn't there. Job was struggling with despair. The word means literally here to melt. The idea of failing, of wasting away. This is the only place in Scripture where this word is used as an adjective. Job was saying that he was falling apart inside, just kind of melting away. It certainly looked that way on the outside. That wasn't going very well. That was falling apart. But he's saying this is going on the inside as well. He had no inner strength to face life. At such times, whatever a person needs to hear at some point, there needs to be a sympathetic approach at first. Something that we haven't seen since Eliphaz started speaking. The word kindness here can be translated gentleness. A man who's just melting inside needs to see some gentleness. We're reminded of Galatians 6:1, where even those who are caught in a trespass are to be handled with gentleness. It's expressly stated there. Approach such a person with a spirit of gentleness. Surely someone like Job, who had not committed any serious sin, should have been given some kind words of support in this situation. This is what's so remarkable as we consider again the words of Eliphaz in chapters 4 and 5 that we've been through. There's an utter lack, it seems, of fellow feeling. I'm not saying that there's a lack of good intentions, but there's a lack of fellow feeling. There's no sense of understanding how hard this situation would be. There does not seem to be any kind of a putting himself in this person's place. There's no recognition that, hey, I am also prone to fall into wrong thoughts, wrong actions myself. No real humility, it doesn't seem. This is a lecture that is given. That's how I would have taken it. This is a lecture, not a commiseration. Did not Job most need some expressions of just loyalty here? Wouldn't that have just meant the world to him? Some words of commitment that these men will be there with him and for him, whatever lay ahead. Such support can go a long way to keeping someone in a spiritual frame of mind, and I think that's what Job is saying here. That would have really helped me. Just in my relationship with the Lord, it is a blessing when we can see the faithfulness of the Lord, which is sometimes hard to grasp even though we know it's there, but to see that faithfulness of the Lord in the faithfulness of a friend. When I was thinking about this, an incident here at the church many years ago came immediately to my mind. Some members at that period were perhaps not showing me the respect that a pastor should experience. There was a talk of leaving our fellowship in the air. It was really the only season of any kind of substantial unpleasantness that I've known in my 17 plus years here. And I would not say that I was a despairing man. I'm not trying to make any, you know, correlation with where Job was, but it was not good times, I wouldn't say. I was wondering where all of this was heading. You know, what's this all going to mean for the life of our body? In the middle of all of this, Lloyd approached me at the back of the sanctuary one Sunday. I don't remember the exact words, and those exact words don't matter anyway. What was communicated was that he was supportive of my ministry no matter what these other people were doing or what they were saying. He had my back, in essence. Well, those were words of kindness delivered to me at the right time by a loyal friend. The effect of that was one of determination on my part to in turn be loyal to whatever the Lord was calling me to do. It was a strengthening for my spiritual fight, for my spiritual walk with the Lord. And I think that is what Job is getting at here. And I'm not making excuses for sinful reactions to trials, okay? I'm not saying that if someone gives us grief instead of kindness, that, well, then we have carte blanche to just run amok because, you know, we weren't helped, we weren't strengthened, so, you know, we're free to, you know, just blow up or something. No. We are always responsible for our own behavior. But I think we do share a responsibility for what we lead others toward. If our words discourage a brother or sister, you know, so that it puts them on the sidelines, I think that we do have our own culpability before the Lord. So let us be thinking about which direction our words will push a person. That's Job's concern. Are we leading that person toward a greater reverence for the Lord? Or are we pushing them toward a forsaking of that relationship because of the discouragement that we're bringing to them? We can go more quickly through the rest of this section. Verses 15 through 20 have the same theme. When Job says that his brothers have acted deceitfully, okay, they've acted deceitfully, he is not saying that they've been lying to him. Okay? He means this in the sense that their counsel has not been what was anticipated. Their wisdom was not as advertised. There had been that promise of spiritual and emotional refreshment, but that had faded away into disappointment. In that sense, it was deceitful. It didn't live up to the promise. Awadi. Ever encountered the word awadi? Those of you who've been in the Middle East, wadis. They're out there. This is a creek bed in a desert climate that is full of rushing water when there's a hard rain or a quick melting of snow in the mountains. We're familiar with this kind of situation from Southern California. We don't call them wadis there, but that's essentially what they are. The problem is that they either have too much water in them or too little. It's never just right. And that's a good picture of Job's friends. That's why he's chosen this idea of a wadi. This is what his friends are like. When they spoke their accusations, it was like drinking from a fire hose. Man, they couldn't pour out enough of that on him, and he drowned in it. But when he looked for encouragement, hardly a trickle. The problem with wadis is that when you most want them to hold water, when it's really hot and dry and you're thirsty, there's nothing in them. Job was like a traveler in the desert who, hoping to have his thirst assuaged, seeing that there is, you know, a ravine, a gully there, gets up to it, and it's empty. He's left to ride on, parched, on a horse with no name, I would suppose. Job is confounded that those whom he trusted to help him in his distress have so little to offer. What could explain this? Well, he takes a stab at this in verses 21 and 23. He's running this through his mind. How in the world could I have got this when I was expecting this? Could it be that they were afraid that God would treat them the same way that he had Job if they showed some sympathy for him? Is that what they were afraid of? Get too close to this guy, show too much fellow feeling, and you're going to be, you know, in trouble just like him? If that was what they were thinking, that would be a colossal misread of God's character. But it is true, isn't it, that our own unfounded fears can lead us to babble forth some rather unhelpful words to those who are in pain. We're really reflecting more of our own issues, as we say, than anything else. We can be afraid of looking like we don't care. So we say certain things that aren't appropriate. Or we're afraid that we don't really have good answers. And so we don't say the things that we should. We can be afraid of silence sometimes. Now, these guys, certainly at the beginning, didn't have a big issue there. You know, they came and sat for 7 days. I don't know that you need to go that far, but sometimes we can be afraid of just sitting with a person, just having a companionable silence. We feel like we got to fill that up, and we do that with nonsense. Sometimes we're unsettled in the face of something that's unfamiliar, something that's tragic. At such times, we can fall back on rigid principles, you know, meaningless phrases. Or maybe they were mostly afraid of what Job was going to demand of them. Verses 22 and 23 lead us in that direction. Maybe they felt that if they showed great sympathy, that Job would be encouraged to ask for substantial sacrifices on their part. He could become a drain. He could become a burden. As long as Job was an object of God's displeasure and under punishment, they need not extend themselves. I mean, he's saying, you know, what is this going on? Am I asking you for some big, you know, gift or something? Some big sacrifice? Surely that can't be what's on your mind. Job is saying that all that he desired was a little sympathy. He didn't want these huge things that might have been on their minds is what they were getting into. He didn't want them to solve all of his problems, make everything better, make it all go away, but just acknowledge that he was going through an incredibly tough time for mysterious reasons. That they couldn't understand this perhaps any better than he could really understand this at this point. Perhaps this is a little like when a woman tells a man how rough her day has been. She's usually not wanting anything but a listening ear, a sense that he understands. Nod and 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 relate. She wants to know why you aren't doing anything to help. So this is what's missing with these bumblers. The milk of human kindness was not pouring forth. They'd left a despairing man more depressed than ever. If your best friends can't find it in their hearts to give an encouraging word, where are you? Not home on the range, that's for sure. So we turn now to the excess of the council. The excess. We've seen what wasn't there. There had been no kind words, but there had been a lot of other verbiage that was unhelpful. Verses 24 through 30. Teach me and I will be silent, and show me how I have erred. How painful are honest words, but what does your argument prove? Do you intend to reprove my words when the words of one in despair belong to the wind? You would even cast lots for orphans and barter over your friend. Now, please look at me and see if I lie to your face. Desist now. Let there be no injustice. Even desist. My righteousness is yet in it. Is there injustice on my tongue? Cannot my palate discern calamities? Discern words as the side note has it. Well, there's a lot of undercurrent in verses 24 and 25, isn't there? Boy, you can sense some sarcasm. There's definitely some challenge here. Eliphaz had adopted the tone of an instructor in chapters 4 and 5. His approach, I think, could even be termed as patronizing, condescending. You know, we don't tend to like that when that gets directed our way. Well, Job is saying, hey, you want to school me? Go ahead. I'm listening. But you're going to have to come up with something a lot better than what you've brought out so far. His obvious meaning here is that he hadn't heard anything edifying up to this point. Did not expect to hear much that was helpful going forward either, the way they were approaching this. He was being told at length about the bitter harvest that he had sowed and reaped. He was being called foolish. He was being told that he had been a complete detriment to his family. Well, okay, that's your case that you're trying to prove, then let's talk some specifics. If Eliphaz wanted to give some evidence of Job's unrighteousness, he was all ears. Let's hear it. What have you got? But the reality was that Eliphaz had nothing to teach him. He was speaking in ignorance as far as his application to Job's life. There was no smoking gun that he could point to. Job acknowledges in verse 25 that it can be productive to hear an honest reproof. You know, as much as it might hurt a bit first, you know, that can be a good thing. Painful here is better translated as forceful. How forceful are honest words? Truth from a friend can penetrate where other counsel from other sources just be shrugged off. As Proverbs 27:6 affirms, faithful are the wounds of a friend. That is often how we know who our friends are. You know, they're not just going to let us go off in a damaging direction without saying anything about it. King David wrote, "Let the righteous smite me in kindness and reprove me." You know, what a phrase, smite me in kindness. It is oil upon the head. Do not let my head refuse it. You know, he's giving himself counsel. When that comes, don't turn away from it, because that is the good stuff. Well, that kind of a spirit, that openness to the reproof, that's hard to maintain, but that is the right spirit. Job recognizes the need to hear a rebuke. But Eliphaz had not proven anything against Job. He talked about general principles and what he had seen and what he had heard in the night and how God rewards the righteous, just about everything but what actually was going on in Job's life. He had never said anything about how all this actually did specifically apply to Job. Verse 26 makes it clear just how excessive all of that argumentation had been. Job was talking out of the depths of his despair in chapter 3. He was not trying to put a serious case for any particular position forward in regard to his suffering. The NIV has this as if Job's words were being treated like the wind. So he's saying, you know, you're treating my words as if they were just wind. But I think that Job is saying that they should have been treating them that way to some extent, and they weren't. Don't get me wrong. Job did want his words to be taken seriously. but not because of their literal content. He wanted it to communicate his inner turmoil. Instead of trying to get past those words into Job's heart and what was going on in his life, the friends, in a sense, they took the easy way out and crucified him for his actual words. One way we could put it is that Eliphaz had decided to drop an atom bomb to kill off an ant. If these friends had done some sincere and kind probing of what was really bothering Job, they could have found more productive matters to discuss. He's saying, why did you get off on attacking all of that stuff? Why did you prefer to go in hard and attack the wrong problem? There was so much else that really could have been helpful to me. This verse brings up the question of how much stock we should put in the emotional outbursts of another person. Always kind of a tricky thing, isn't it? How do you really react to it? Now, obviously, if a person is always making hurtful or, bizarre pronouncements, using that kind of a thing as a weapon to manipulate and so forth, that needs to be addressed. You know, aid and abet, that kind of a habitual activity. But occasionally, we must consider, to what degree is a person serious and how important it is to address the very words themselves. There are times, I think, to go right past the words to what's driving the emotions, the deeper issues. There's also a time, I think, to be deaf and dumb. to ignore what we know is not meant seriously. But I don't think that there are any rules, for knowing, when that is. We just need to use discernment as these things come out and try to weigh them. The point is that not every word in a time of crisis needs to be put under a microscope. They're usually more important things. Job finishes with some words that highlight the cold-heartedness of the response of these counselors. They were interested in preserving their point of view. That's what this was about. They had a point of view on why suffering comes to a given person, that they were gonna, make sure that was accepted, a given. They were not that interested in Job's needs for emotional support. For this was kind of clinical to them in a way. This was business. Job's suffering had seemed to touch them when they first arrived. You don't know whether to read the later words back into that or how to quite understand that. But there was certainly no compassion now in their words. Job concludes with a proclamation of his innocence. These guys were barking up the wrong tree. They should stop this constant accusation. Could they not see his sincerity? This is me, guys, Job. Job would not lie to them about this. He was not trying to cover up something. He was not pretending to be a righteous man. Discern in verse 30 is literally taste. Is there injustice on my tongue? Cannot my palate taste words, really, is probably the best translation there. Perhaps Job is saying that he's discriminating enough spiritually to be able to taste the error in the words of his friends, but he's probably saying that if he were saying anything unjust, anything that was false about his own life, He would know it himself. He could be saying that his conscience was bearing him witness, that he was presenting the truth to his friends, that he had had a righteous lifestyle, that this did not have anything to do with sin in his life. So the upshot is that the friends of Job did not come close to finding the right tack to take with him. They had too little kindness and support, too much condescension and condemnation. Okay, so as we get ready to part, what should we be saying to people who are despairing? We certainly should communicate our support as best we can. Communicate that loyalty, that I am with you, behind you, wherever this goes. We certainly want to talk about God and his nature, not get fixated on what man does. But in doing that, here are a few thoughts. We encourage others to rest in God's greatness. I'm going to give you three G's here. Rest in God's greatness. Eliphaz spoke of this. We want to be fair about that. He spoke about the great, majestic God, but not in the most helpful way. The Lord knows everything about our situation. Nothing is beyond his control. It is no harder for him to do one thing than another. He can still the storms of the sea, and he can still the storms of our heart as well. So we should talk about that ability of God. He can do whatever is necessary. We just need to see that and trust in that. Then we encourage others to rest in God's goodness. We're talking about that in Sunday school today. Got to have that sovereign, all-powerful God. But then talk about his goodness. He is exerting that omnipotent nature on our behalf. He has a positive outcome in store, though we can't be sure what form that will take. He has a good plan. He acts at the perfectly right time. So we talk about a God who can be trusted because of that goodness. He cares about us more than we do about ourselves, because he only pursues that which is ultimately spiritually healthy for us. What a wonderful thing. And then we encourage one another to rest in God's grace. He is determined to overcome all of our fleshly reactions for his glory. I guess maybe that's even a fourth one, a fourth G. Let's stick that in there too, his glory. People might at times need a rebuke if they persist in behaviors that the Bible identifies as sinful. You know, we use discernment, you know, over time. Someone, you know, in depression and so forth, sometimes, you know, somewhere along the line, they might need a kind of a strong word of, hey, you know, time to really snap out of this. Depression is no excuse for blatant continual disobedience to God. There is no excuse for that of any kind. But there can be a sense of failure in one who is struggling with despair. Why, you know, why am I like that? I shouldn't be like that. I shouldn't be having these kinds of thoughts. You know, why do I fall into this, you know, from time to time and so forth. And some of the very greatest, most influential, useful believers, you know, of history have been plagued with that kind of a thing. So we want to remind such people that God is still at work in the life. God is forgiving them in this state just as much as he was ever forgiving them, you know, in another state in which they thought they were really doing a lot better. You know, how does God look at that? You know, probably there are times when we are, you know, kind of happy with ourselves where we have more to forgive than, you know, what we know. But those who are struggling with despair need to hear that God is still growing them, still working with them. He's there just as much with him then as he ever was in the times of greatest excitement and happiness. He never abandons his people. He never lessens the way that he's working with us at any given time. It's always exactly what we need. God will graciously get us all to where he wants us to be in our walk with him. Let's pray. Lord,